So my first announcement is, in case you haven't prayed yet, I think you should pray, because it'll be a little ironic if we talk about intensive prayer and you haven't prayed. So, mincha's at 8:20, so if you need to run out, that's okay. It's nice to be here, and I'm excited to learn together. You know, it's the dog days of summer, but we know what counts, and we're here to learn some Torah together. And this is probably the only situation I'd be wearing a suit right now. But you do what you have to. Okay. I want to explain a little bit why I'm talking about this topic. The truth is, it was sort of requested I do something connected to Inyanei, I think, Elul and Chagim, and I find it a little disorienting to go there just yet, you know. So I was like, well, why don't I speak about something a little bit more broadly about prayer? And I think that also has relevance for now, for the 3 weeks, because obviously 3 weeks is time of Etzara, and Etzara, we intensify our prayers. But the truth is, why intensive prayer? And I think I saw one or two sources here in the source sheet, which I'll get to, which I just noticed this particularly interesting, so that was sort of in the back of my mind. But I also was reading an excellent book, a biography of Nachman of Breslov, called Tormented Master. It's a classic. It's been around for 30, 40 years, but I only got to it now. And some of the passages about Rav Nachman and prayer are just so moving and powerful that it struck a chord. So just to read one description of him, and it's very pained and anguished, but also, I think, deeply yearning for closeness to God. And it's from Shifrei Moharan, but I'll read it in English. This is describing Rav Nachman in his youth. He would often speak to God in heartfelt supplications and pleas, but nevertheless he felt he wasn't being noticed or heard at all. On the contrary, it seemed to him that he was being pushed away from the service of God in all kinds of ways, as though he were utterly unwanted. Days and years passed by, and still he was far from, capital H, him. He had not attained any sense of nearness at all. Despite all this, he would fortify himself and refuse to leave his place. At times he would become depressed when he saw that despite all his begging and pleading to draw near to God's service, no attention was being paid him at all. At such times he would cease his private prayers for a number of days. Then he would catch himself and be overcome with shame for having called the goodness of God into question. And he would begin again to plead before the Lord as before. All this happened to him any number of times. So it's very, I think, just moving passage that stands for itself. Not too much to add. And I guess on some level, that type of intensity, you know, I found very moving. And got me thinking a little bit more about praying intensely. Now, I guess because I'm not an intense prayer, I study and analyze praying intensely. I think on some level, if you're in deep, you don't need to study the sources, you do it. But nevertheless, I think from a more removed analytical frame, it's interesting to explore certain sources of Chazal, and that's really my aim here, to collect and to try to organize and present to you. And, you know, please keep the packet. I worked, you know, for a while on collecting some of these sources. There are others. It's not entirely comprehensive, but it's a decent start. So that's what I'm going to do together. Now, I guess sort of one caveat before I begin. What does it mean to pray intensely? That word is a little loose. And I admit it's loose. I mean, I made up the topic and made up the title, so I'm guilty. So I'm going to use it in a sort of generous sense. And you could quibble with me and argue with me or separate out the different types of manifestations of intensity, and maybe they are different. But for my purposes, I'm going to aggregate them and look at them together. So for me, intensity includes prayer that's longer than, you know, sort of the basic duration of prayer. Longer, it could take you longer, or it could take the prayer a longer amount of time, or maybe the prayer really adds to the prayer beyond sort of the minimum liturgy. It's prayer that's done more frequently. That could be a different type of intensity, more than the normative minimum of, let's say, 3 times a day. It could be more persistent, sort of the pitch, the tone, a little bit more demanding. or a lot more demanding of God. It could be more emotive. You know, it comes with an emotional pitch, more ecstatic. That's sort of a mystical type of a term, where one senses that one's closer to the divine presence or in divine rapture. It could be spontaneous, that sort of I touched on already. And then I would just add also, it could be desperate and with urgency. To me, all of that is a form of intensity that goes beyond the normal showing up to Shul for Minyan three times a day, okay? And the question is, what do we think about that? What do we chazal, what do we, our great sources, what do we think about that mode of prayer? I think whenever we encounter a human being who prays that way, we are, you know, it's very overwhelming and impressive. And I think that on some level that has to be the bottom line, if it's sincere. But still, what can we glean from our sources? So I try to organize it a little bit just in terms of framing or outlining here. So look on page 3. Let's do a lot of sources. That's really the objective here. The first one's on page 3, source. I'll go with Roman numeral 1. We're in Roman numeral 1, source 1. And the first question I want to deal with is, well, who do we see that prays intensely in our sources? Who prays intensely? So very famous Mishnah and Brachot. Why don't we do this a little more interactive? Do we have a reader? Why don't we do that sometimes? And then when I'm desperate and out of time and urgent, I will take over. Can we get a reader for source 1? Just loud. That's the key. It has to be loud. Yeah. Like really loud.
Should I stand up to say?
Okay, sorry.
Say in a
reverent frame of mind. Okay.
Pious man of old used to wait an hour before praying in order that they might concentrate their thoughts upon their Father in heaven. Even if the king greets him while praying, he should not answer him. Even if a snake wound round his heel, he should not break off.
Okay. Thank you. So this is a very famous Mishnah about that one should pray with Kovod Rosh, reverent frame of mind. And then it records the famous practice of the Chassidim, the pious men of old. And their practice was that they would take a while to get ready. Sha'achat. And in fact, in the Gemara, it goes more than Sha'achat. It even gives a source that they would take 3 sha'ot to prepare for prayer. And then there would also be a cool-off period, according to that Gemara. But even the hour is quite striking. It takes an hour to get in the right mood. And then I think sort of the end of the Mishnah, to me, also is part of the whole tone of the Mishnah. Because then it sort of says, what's at stake? What's at stake if you're in that type of intense prayer? Well, what's at stake is that even if a king wants your attention, and again, that's not just niceties. If a king is stopping you, of course, you need to respond to the king. And yet, the way the Mishnah spells it out, no, if you are so immersed, if you're so intense, if you are so present before the ultimate king, of course you can't stop for mortal flesh and blood, even a king. Or the end of the Mishnah, even, you know, a dangerous creature where there's life-threatening, you know, circumstance, even then you are so wrapped up in your prayers that you cannot stop. Now, the Gemara, interestingly, Yerushalmi and Bavli can't really believe this. They say, is tefillah really yahareg val yavor? You have to die for prayer? And the Gemara qualifies it. The Gemara says, well, it depends. Is it a snake? Is it a scorpion? Interesting Gemara. It's also in the Yerushalmi, parallels to that. And nevertheless, the Yerushalmi and Bavli both tell stories of Chachamim who were defiant nonetheless and kept praying, even in the face of kings, even in the face of snakes, poisonous snakes. They kept praying. And that certainly seems to be the simple sense of the Mishnah. So the Mishnah implies a very high level, but I would say it's a high level that we presume is reserved for the Chassidim. The Chassidim could pray on that type of madrega. Once heard a whole shiur from Rav Meidan where he talked about that this Mishnah really is meant kipshuta as well. Doesn't mean that halachic we could adhere to that standard. So we dilute it for the masses. But the chassidim, that's the level of prayer. Okay. And another, these are also some of my favorite sources. So at least we're seeing beautiful sources. So source two is another beautiful source. I'll read this one. It's a little more complicated. Vayichal Moshe pnei Hashem. Gemara in Brachos. So Moshe implored God. When is that verse said? It's actually, there's also a verse in Vayichanan, but Vayichanan actually in the verse is referring back to this episode. This is from Shmuel Lamed Bet. And when is it? Chet HaEgel. After Chet HaEgel, desperate, urgent hour. Vayichal Moshe pnei Hashem. So the Gemara, of course, in its curiosity, wonders, what was his posture? Vayichal. Is the Gemara, ever curious, ever subtle, picks up on that unusual term, Vayichal. So what was Moshe's posture? And the Gemara gives all sorts of readings, some of them quite radical. Like that Moshe even, just one of them that is not the main one I want to point out, but just a line, about six lines in, Ribono shel olam, chulin hu lecha masot kadavar hazeh. Okay, that's intense prayer in the sense of persistent or demanding. God, it's sacrilege for you to punish the Jewish people in that way. Wow. But for our purposes, I think the last Rasha is just as important. Vayichal Moshe pnei Hashem, where it's underlined, Tanya Rabbi Eliezer HaGadol Omer, Milamed Sha'amad Moshe B'tfilah Lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ad Sha'achzato Achilu. The Moshe stood there, he persisted there, until he became ill, until he became sick. He prayed until he became sick. May Achilu, Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Eish Shel Atzamot. Fire in the bones. I think I once heard Dr. Aviva Zornberg speak about it. I think that was the title of the speech. Fire in the bones. It's a great line. Same thing, basically. Fire in the bones. But it's a fever in the bones. Moshe became feverish in prayer. Right? Vayichal, I think it's basically in the Lashon Chole. Ad Shana Asa Chole. He begat fever. He was so on fire, he was so intense, that he became feverish. But I think in that line is not just sort of upping the fever and upping the temperature, but it's also becoming weakened and ill. He flirted with, you know, the limits of human capacity through that kind of a prayer. So I think it's really interesting how Source 1 and Source 2, first of all, who's praying? Who's praying intensely in Source 1? Who's praying intensely in Source 1? Chassidim. And who is praying intensely in Source 2? Moshe. So it is the epitome, the apex of the spiritually intense. And in both sources, I'd say danger lurks. Right? You pray and you might die. You pray and you might expire. If you pray in this kind of a way. There's a third source, which also I think is, you know, works well with these other two, similar, you know, or at least in certain senses, similar. Source 3, Tanu Rabbanan. Okay, so let's take it from the second line. Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda. Can we get a reader for that? Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda, go ahead.
Tanya Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Kacha minhago shel Rabbi Akiva. Kishaya mitpalel hatzibur, haya mikatzer ve'ola, mipnei torah hatzibur. Ukshaya mitpalel beino levein atzmo, אדם מניחו בזווית זו ומוצאו בזווית אחרת, וכל כך למה? מפני קריאות ושתי חוויות.
Okay. So Rabbi Akiva had this very unusual practice. Well, it depends. If he was with the tzibur, you know, in shul for minyan, then he would pray sort of in the normal way. Mekatzer v'ola, be brief. But when he was beino lebein atzmo, very famous Gemara, you could see him begin in one corner, and by the end of davening, it was so intense that he was at the other end of the room. And the Gemara adds that he was prostrating and bowing. Obviously, an intensive kind of prayer in its own variety. And here too, who's the person who prays like this? Rabbi Akiva. And it's quite clear, Rabbi Akiva, not everybody else. As the source spells out, that everybody else basically did what? Mekatzer va'oleh. Right? When he's with everybody else, Mekatzer va'oleh, because that's the Derech HaTzibur. Rabbi Akiva, Yechidei Skula, you know, the elect, the spiritual elite, you know, very, very small, you know, list, they pray in a different kind of way. Here we don't see danger, I don't see that theme, but I think there's another theme that's implicit here that is, I think, noteworthy about intense prayer. Not that it's dangerous, that we've seen, but that it challenges standard normative practice. Why? I'm not saying that Rabbi Akiva violated, but he flirts with violating standard halacha. In what sense? Standing. He doesn't stand. Because we know tefillah, amidah, has a very set posture. Stationary. Amidah. And Rabbi Akiva is doing the opposite of amidah. To which the Gemara even has to explain a little bit what's the justification. And we could give a certain justification, but clearly the justification is sort of pushing what amidah is. It's the opposite of amidah. It's tezuzah, right? It's not amidah. So intense prayer, I think also, it's dangerous, and it also pushes the boundaries of standard normative halacha. So if I just had these three sources, I would say these are, you know, stunning, powerful descriptions, and they are very, very limited to the Yechidei Skula, like the Chassidim Rishonim, like Moshe, like Rabbi Akiva. And is there any vestige or relic of them, you know, in today's day and age? So I would say beginning with Rav Nachman might be appropriate. In other words, people like Rav Nachman, the Yechidei Skula, the Tzadikim, more the, you know, mystical or mystically oriented, right? So I think, you know, some of this resonates with what we saw in the desperation of Rav Nachman, but let me just read to you one or two other from Louis Jacob's book, Hasidic Prayer, just certain descriptions, which I think resonate with some of what we saw. But these are descriptions of ecstatic prayer of the Hasidic masters, of the great Tzadikim. So, for example, one early Hasidic text says that when a person prays, he should reflect before he begins to pray that he is prepared to die while he is praying as a result of his concentration. There are some, in fact, whose concentration in prayer is so intense among the Hasidim that were nature left to itself, they would die after uttering no more than four or five words in God's presence, blessed be He. So the theme of flirting with the limits of human capacity, you know, resurface in these Hasidic descriptions from the late 18th century. Or another description. A number of tzaddikim were especially noted for their ecstatic prayers. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev, the holy Rav Levi, is the subject of numerous Hasidic tales describing his ardor in prayer. And there is undoubtedly a core of historical truth beyond all the legends. Of Rabbi Levi Yitzchak, it is said that he used to pray with such awe of God that he was physically incapable of staying in one place. And he would move about while praying. His burning enthusiasm was so infectious that all who were present when he recited his prayers would be brought nearer to God, etc. So just like as Rabbi Akiva strays, so in the 18th, 19th century, Rabbi Levi Yitzchak. But these are, you know, very, very unique personalities, exceptional personalities. And yet, was there a question or comment? I felt like there was a question, I'm sorry. Did you have a question or a comment? No? Okay, I thought I saw a hand. Feel free to jump in, although I'm going to try to push a little bit also for sources. But if it's a, or at the end you could ask. And yet, if you push further in sources, you will see that at least certain forms of intense prayer are not just reserved for the, you know, the tzaddikim or the chassidim or the chidei skula, but extend broadly. And you can see that on the bottom of page 3. We'll read it inside in a minute. Or on to page 4, we'll see some of these sources inside, and page 4 in Roman numeral 2, that we're clearly speaking broadly, not just to unique tzaddikim or chassidim, but even within the orbit of these halachot that we just read. I think it is certainly noteworthy to see how they come down la halacha. So turn here on page 4 to source 4 and 5. And that's already noteworthy that there's a halachic, canonized, normative text that records any aspect of the sources that we just saw on page 3. Because the sources we saw on page 3 are very powerful, unique sources, but far from obvious that they should be in halachic texts. And yet, look at the Rambam, source 4. Ketzad hi hakavana. What's the nature of, or what's the proper way to have kavanah? Shifne libo mikol ha-machshavot. V'yireh atzmo kilu ha-omed lifnei ha-shechina. So a high level of kavanah. This is already noted by Reb Chaim. Reb Chaim, al-Rambam. That the Rambam has a very, Chaim Soloveitchik, there's a high level of kavanah he's demanding. Okay, for another time. Lefichach, tzarich leshev me'at, kodem ha-tfilah. Listen to this. Therefore, one should pause and wait before one begins. Now, given that I've never come to davening on time, this would be hard for me. But if one is timely and does it right, then timely means 5 minutes early or 10 minutes early. Lefichach tzarich leshev me'ad kodem ha-tfilah kedei l'chaveina libo v'achar kach yipalal b'nachad uv'tachnunim v'lo yaseh tfilato k'mishaya noseh masui ma'ashechov ha'olach lo. So the right way to do it is to come a little bit early and prepare. Where's he getting that from? The notion of preparation? From the Hasidim HaRishonim. And then he clearly links it. And then he says, Hasidim HaRishonim, hayu shohin sha'a achat kodem tefilah, v'sha'a achat achat tefilah, marachin betefilah sha'a. And he says, indeed, this was the way of the early pious ones, that they would take an hour before, an hour during, and an hour afterwards to heat up, to be ready, to, you know, to pray properly, and then to cool down or to take away from prayer that which one can take away. So I'm saying the diuk to make here is that the Rambam's codifying the Hasidim HaRishonim. It's not just the Hasidim HaRishonim. It's not just Moshe. It's not just Rabbi Akiva. We should all hold up Hasidim HaRishonim as a paradigm. It doesn't mean we all are Hasidim HaRishonim. It doesn't mean we all take 3 hours to pray. But we all should know of that example as an aspiration. And we each should imitate the Hasidim HaRishonim, at least in a more moderate version, of a little bit preparation before and a little bit of time afterwards. This also comes up in the Shulchan Aruch. Yeah.
That we all witness, or many of us witness, some of the daily prayer.
Yeah.
And I was always wondering if they don't violate the real prescription what the Rambam is saying, what should be in an orderly fashion, a certain way.
Yeah.
Some down after this month,
right.
But there's the intensity,
right.
Very much like it.
Right.
Very much. The Satna Rebbe,
right.
Or some of the Rebbe,
right.
Certain
right. Yeah. Right, for sure.
So this is not, that's why people call.
Ram Shanover is famous for doing things in a different way. And a lot of great Hasidic tzaddikim and masters. Yeah, I mean, that's what this book's about Hasidic prayer, that they took some of these ideas and went very far with them. And so we're seeing some of the normative and halachic sources to see where some of it comes from. But I think even within, you know, very sober, rational halachic sources, what I'm noting is that this is being held up as a model. What would the Rambam think of somebody who held, you know, is so intense that it starts to, you know, alter timing and, other standard halacha, you get the, you know, you imagine it's not exactly the Rambam's approach. Although the Rambam could get quite intense and passionate when he talks about cleaving to God and praying, so it's hard to know. But I imagine it wouldn't be for the Rambam. But the Hasidim, they have their explanations. They think that Kavanah, sort of overwhelms and you know, that is the reason that, you know, these other rules and regulations are necessary when it's not sort of the higher mode of prayer. It's actually a good segue to the Shulchan Aruch. Because note the Shulchan Aruch, who's like the Rambam, but really I would say is a little bit even more than the Rambam. So look at the Shulchan Aruch here. Hamitpalel tzarich shiichavein belibo perush hamilot shemotzi b'sfatav. So the beginning is that you should have kavana of the words. That's pretty basic. But now he goes further. Yechshov kilu shchina kenegdo. Should envision or imagine that one's standing right in the presence of God. Kol ha-machshavot ha-todototo ad she-tishar machshavtov kanoto zaka b'tfilah. That one should purge all extraneous thoughts or distractions so one is concentrating on being in the divine presence. Ve'echshov ki'ilu haya medaber lifnei melech basar v'dam haya mesader dvarav mechaven bahem yafeh la bali chashel kal v'chomer lifnei melech malchei hamlachem HaKadosh Baruch Hu shuchoker kol ha-machshavot. So if imagine how much you'd prepare if you were meeting human king, you know, alcha kama v'kama if you're meeting melech malchei hamlachem. But now he adds, v'kach hayu osim chasidim v'anshei ma'aseh. This is what the early pious ones did. But it's not just the early ones. Now the chasidim, anshei ma'aseh. And you get the sense sort of ongoing. Right? Even in present time. Shayu mitbodedim u'mechavnim b'tfilatam. They would isolate themselves. And they would, concentrate on prayer. And listen to this line. Ad shayu magi'im lihit pashtut hagashmut. Until they reach the level of abandoning the material, ulihit gabrut koach hasichli, the intensification of one's mental or, you know, cognitive capacity. And this next line I think is just striking. Ad shayu magi'im karov lema'alat hanivuah. When they flirted with the prophetic. If one prays in, you know, the most intense fashion, then one approximates or starts to converge on the prophetic. And again, what I'm noting is, and he's bringing this in Shulchan Aruch. He's recording this in Shulchan Aruch. We should know what's the kavanah of each mitpalel. Well, there's at least a model, an ideal, an aspiration. The aspiration is to the level of the Chasidim Anshei Ma'aseh who approach Nivu'ah, prophecy through prayer. So of course, you know, Rav Yosef Karo knows that most of us don't come anywhere near that, and yet we're supposed to be aware of that ideal. That ideal is supposed to be present for us. So I think that's really quite stunning. And, you know, the Shulchan Aruch often replicates the Rambam or lifts formulations from the Rambam or is inspired by the Rambam. And here I think you could clearly see some of Rav Yosef Karo's mysticism, you know, beginning with the Maimonidean formulation but then overwhelming it. Because, you know, he's just not waxing poetic, it's intensifying, you know, what's at stake here. Okay, and then the rest, by the way, is also interesting, but you could look at it on your own. So let me just summarize the first theme. And the first theme is who should pray intensely. So if you read the early Chazal sources, you might get the impression of just Yechidei Skula. And indeed, there's some vestige of that, a relic of that. And I think, as people said, that they have some firsthand, even eyewitness encounters with tzaddikim and chassidim who pray in that sort of intense vein. But my point is that all of these sources surface in the basic normative text that we have, the halachic text we have. Rambam, Mishneh Torah, Rav Yosef Karo, Shulchan Aruch, and the Rambam finds ways that each of us can participate in the derech of Chassidim HaRishonim and yet be aware that there's a more intense version of Chassidim HaRishonim. And likewise, the Shulchan Aruch, when he talks about Kavana, you know, spells out clearly what the apex of Kavana is and intensifies the formulation that even reaches the point of the prophetic. Any questions so far? Okay, now what I want to do is look a little bit more carefully in other Chazal sources to see whether, so far, intensive prayer is an ideal at least. Intensive prayer is an ideal. So the question is, are they all in agreement that intensive prayer is an ideal? So here I think you could find, and here, you know, sort of the slipperiness of what I mean by intense might come into play, and maybe one could distinguish between different forms of intensity. I am going to, you know, like I said, combine them and then suggest that I think even in Chazal, there are different attitudes. So on the one hand, you have certainly positive sources. Well, the descriptions that we saw were positive so far. But I would add also here, let's look here on page 4, source 1. Famous source. Can we get a reader for this one? Let's not be shy. You got to be intense, not shy. Yeah. See, you want to... page 4, source 1. Okay, you could say, you can explain, sure.
Basically, God will not listen to my prayer. Okay. Even though the gates of prayer have been locked, the gates of his ears are not locked. And I'm hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear unto my cry. Keep not silent at my tears. The emphasis is on tears.
On tears. Right. So this source, I think, is quite clear. It's actually a little depressing that ordinary prayer doesn't work. And the only prayer that's effective is intense prayer, at least emotively intense prayer. That's the only prayer that's effective. So clearly the source is sort of beseeching us to beseech God emotively. With you know, all the intensity that we could conjure up, the only tears could penetrate in a world without temple, in a world where God's more withdrawn. Okay, or let's turn for a second to the opening line here. Let's turn to page 5, source 5, and then we'll come back. We're going to have to look at that source more carefully, but let's just do it for a second. Just this is a little more straightforward. Page 5, source 5. Amar Rab Chanina, kol hamarich b'tfilato, ein tfilato chozeret reikam. So it's a promise that if one, and there's a different kind of intensity, it's not necessarily emotively intense, but it's one expands, elaborates, I'm not so sure what this means, quantitatively, qualitatively, but it's a different form of intensity. But I think, you know, it's certainly, you know, related to the other types of intensity. So one who extends and takes more time, etc. The prayer will not, you know, it's a guarantee. Eino chozeret reikam, and we'll have to come back to that. Or, for example, related to this, turn back to page 3 on the bottom. I'm sorry, here we have to sort of dance around a little bit, but most of the time the sources are sort of in the right sequence, but here let's just turn for a second. On the bottom of page 3, Im Marnami Amar Rav Chiya Barashi Amar Rav. Famous statement, and all of this comes in Shulchan Aruch, that if one can expand, there's room to be spontaneous or personalized prayer and personalized requests, more specifically, in Shomea Tefillah. We all know that, right? In the Brach of Shomea Tefillah, we can insert personal petitions. But then it adds that at the end of davening, one can elaborate, you know, afilu keseder shel Yom HaKippurim, which is quite a license, right? Because we think Yom Kippur is the Yom, you know, Yom HaTfilah, the one where we have the extensive prayers. And here it's saying that every day, if a person feels the need or wishes to, one may. So this source says one may. The previous source that we said, and if one does, you know, they're good results. Yeah.
So, prior to the prayer being organized
and fixed and a step,
people used to pray. pray their own words,
right,
their own emotions,
right,
their own requests.
Right.
And maybe then it was just more intense.
Yeah, there was a little bit where there was more room for fluidity. Although by the time we were, I think, encountering this in Gemara, there's the presumption that prayer is quite set. It's a fascinating topic that you're referring to. It's clear that once upon a time, prayer was more spontaneous, and it became more formulaic, and that's probably, you know, good and bad. It's good and bad because it enables more people to pray, but it makes prayer a little bit more rigid or a little bit more, just formulaic. And so these are sources that allow. And we know, you know, scholars, there's been a lot of amazing scholarship on tefillah, and from Geniza fragments, we know that there really was a lot of innovation in prayer. Even prayer that was written down enough to be in manuscripts that were found in Geniza fragments, that prayer wasn't totally frozen. And it was more, sort of personalized or creative than one might imagine from if you just read, you know, the Gemara. And that's already the famous Mishnah about Kevan Tachnunim and Me'ein Shmona Esre. There's a lot of interesting sources related to that. But that's 100% right, your general comment. But I'm saying this even gets codified in normative text today, that one can elaborate and extend. So I'd say all these sources are, you know, encouraging one to pray intensely with more emotion, with greater length, with more in a more personalized vein. Or now let's get to page 4 on the bottom, source 2. Page 4 on the bottom, source 2. And we have an amazing line of Rabbi Yochanan, very, very famous line of Rabbi Yochanan. On page 4, all the way on the bottom. Rabbi Yochanan Amar. You got a reader for this? This one's short. Alavai shitpalel adam kol hayom kulo. An amazing line. Were it only that man prayed all day long. Yeah. Or if one feels the need to pray, alavai. Now, I cheated a little bit because I read this line, you know, in isolation as a memra. And one almost impression is that as a memra, maybe that's really, you know, the way it was, intended. When it gets recorded in the halachic discourse of Masachet Bracha, it's not recorded in isolation. It's recorded in the context of, look back to Rabbi Lazar for a second, safek kara, safek lo kara. What happens if a person's not sure if they davened? Both for Kriyat Shema, or at the end of that line, source 2, is everybody with me? Page 4, source 2 on the bottom. Safek yitpalel, safek lo yitpalel. So Rabbi Lazar, shita is eino chozer mitpalel. If you're in doubt whether you prayed or not, so Rabbi Lezer Shita says, you think you might have prayed, you're in doubt, you don't pray. And Rabbi Yochanan, to that, responds, Alavai Shepalel Adam Kol Yom Kulo. So if you read in context, then Rabbi Yochanan's much more narrow. Rabbi Yochanan just saying, in a case of doubt, you have license to pray again. But he's not just saying a general statement, but I'm saying, if you read it as a memra, it sounds like he's making a general statement, Alavai Shepalel Adam Kol Yom Kulo. Indeed, in the Gaonim and Rishonim, there's a major, major debate how to understand Shitat Rabbi Yochanan. Is Shitat Rabbi Yochanan giving a general license for Tfilat Nedavot, for voluntary prayers, as much as one feels the need? Or are there sort of standards that one needs to be Mechadesh Davar, one needs to innovate, you can't just be repetitive, you have to add something personal in each new prayer? Or the way other poskim read in a much more constricted way, that's only if you're uncertain whether you prayed. But if you prayed, you did your normative duty. No room to pray another time. But at least read in isolation, Rabbi Yochanan is also encouraging spontaneous prayer, repetitive prayer, intensification of prayer, frequency of prayer. Rabbi Yochanan saying is added to that mix. So is intensive prayer a good thing? So far we've seen a bunch of sources that's a good thing. What about sources that are more critical or skeptical of intensive prayer? So here, there's some famous sources here on the top of page 5. Source 3 and 4 on the top of page 5. Now here, I wonder what people will think, whether this is relevant to this conversation or not. I think it's relevant. I'm not saying that one can't distinguish, but I think it's relevant to think about it in light of these other sources. Ha'udu nachet kameh d'Rab Chanina. Top of page 5, source 3. A man was praying before Rab Chanina. Amar, famous Gemara, Hakel, Hagadol, Hagibor, Hanora, Hadir, Hachazak, Ha'amitz. What was he doing? In a sense, he was being ma'arich b'tfilato. He was personalizing his praise of the Almighty. So he had all sorts of adjectives for God, beyond those that are in our set liturgy. To which, Rav Chanina had a biting response. Amale semtinu l'shafchei demarach. That's it. You could think of 7 adjectives for the Almighty. You move from 3 to 7, and now you're done. And then he continues, Hashtahani tlate lav de katvinu Moshe b'oraita v'atu knesek dov tekninu anan lo aminan lo hova adamar kule hai. Even the 3 we do with great trepidation that we call God, Gadol, Gibor, Nora, because we have paradigm or precedent. We've been taught that that's the right formula to praise God. But if we were doing it on our own, Ilufinu malashira kayam, you can't praise God adequately. Rav Soloveitchik in particular was fond of quoting this Gemara and elaborating on its ideas. But the ideas, you know, the basic ideas speak for themselves, that if one innovates or is spontaneous in trying to praise God, that's a very risky affair. And it's quite, you know, sort of chutzpahdik almost. Small man in front of the Almighty and trying to, you know, innovate a vocabulary of praise of the Almighty. Of course, you have to link this to the Rambam's negative theology. We don't have positive language for God. But I hear the why, because the other why is, but there are sources you should be ma'arich b'tfilato, and you want to connect to God, and you want to sing God's praises. Isn't a lot of tehillim about personal praising of God? So I'd say, as much as this is a source, I see these sources a little bit in tension with other sources. That's the point which I'm saying, I'm sort of making a little bit more of a provocative argument. I'm saying, this source, to me, at least in its direction, points a little bit differently from some of the other sources. I'm not saying you can't resolve it. You could say Shevach is different from Bakashot. You could give resolutions, and they might be important resolutions. But I think it's still interesting to line them up, and perhaps there was a deep tension. How much should one innovate, personalize, intensify, or should one stick with the more prescribed formula that we've been taught? Or another famous source, Haomer, source 4, Yirvachucha Tovim, etc., Harezu Derech Minot. Or the more famous, towards the end of that line, source 4, Modim Modim. A person turns to thank God, and he's so grateful. So he says, thank you, right? Now, in our conversation, a double thank you means that you're really grateful. It's nice if you say thank you, thank you. Sometimes people are embarrassed, not necessary, but that shows you're really grateful. So if you have real gratitude towards God, what's so bad about saying modim, modim? And yet the Mishnah famously says mishat kinoto. And the Gemara, the Mishnah, we don't know exactly what's wrong. Gemara says, because it's already dangerous theologically when you have a double formulation. Maybe you're not praying to one God, different forces, etc. But you read in the Mishnah, I'm not sure you need to read it that way. Just kipshuto, maybe there's a little, just like that other source. Modim, modim, follow the tekken, follow the formula that we were taught. Don't personalize too much. Don't make it too spontaneous. By the way, amazing Tosfos, which I don't have here. Well, it's not the Tosfos. He quotes the Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi says, you could say modim, modim, as long as you're biyachid. In Sibur, it's inappropriate. But when you're davening on your own and you feel like saying to God, thank you, it's a beautiful thing. That's what the Yerushalmi says. The Bavli never says that. So I'm saying, is intensified prayer a good thing? Apparently, if you know how to do it like Moshe or Rabbi Akiva or Chassidim Rishonim, it is. But if we try to do it, all these sources are impressive that they're speaking broadly, right? They're not speaking just to the Chassidim Rishonim. They're speaking broadly. That in general, one should cry when one prays. In general, alavai shitpo el adam kol yam kulo. In general, ha-marich b'tfilato, his tfilah gets answered, or her tfilah gets answered, right? These are general statements, but the counter voice. The one who personalizes, there's a chutzpah in it, or a danger in it, or an inappropriateness in that. And then I think these tensions play out in several sources, 5, 6, and 7, 8, etc. Let's just read 5 a little bit because it's plainly manifest in 5. Page 5, source 5. Everybody's with me? Okay. Amar Rab Chanin, Amar Rab Chanina. Kol ha-ma'arich b'tfilato, ein tfilato chazer reikam. The source that we saw before. If one elaborates on tfilah will not come empty. Minalan Mimosha Rabbeinu Shenemar, and we're nearing these parshiyot, V'et Palal Hashem, V'ktiv Batre V'shma Hashem Elai, Gam B'pam Ahi. The Moshe was persistent, and the Gutei Sofrim, they cite that it's actually from the Pasuk that he was there for Arba'im Yom Arba'im Laila. There might be different gears in the Gemara. But the Moshe stood there for 40 days. That's Ma'arich B'tfilato. But then eventually God submitted to Moshe's plea. Ein Tfilato Chozer Reikam. If you're intense, if you persist, if you're Ma'arich. But listen to the Gemara, fascinating Gemara. Ini, towards the end of the second line, V'amar Rabbi Chiya bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan kol ha'marich b'tfilato u'me'ayen ba'sof ba'lidei ke'ev ha'lev. The more you beseech God, the more heartbreak you're going to have. Because you're more desperate and you invest more in it, and it's going to lead to heartbreak. Wow. Sh'ne'emar tochelem ha'mashcha machala ha'lev. Etc. So how do we resolve these two sources? And again, I think it's the Bavli that needs to resolve them. Maybe there were different attitudes about these things. But the Bavli assumes that they go together. How do they go together? Fifth line, Lokashya. Ha demarech. You see where I have the ha underlined? Because it's important. Lokashya. Ha demarech u'ma'ayin ba. Ha demarech v'lo ma'ayin ba. If you extend your tefillah, lengthen your tefillah, but don't do iyun tefillah, examination of tefillah, then that's a good thing and will bring good results. But if you do iyun tefillah, it's going to lead to heartbreak. What's iyun tefillah? Yeah, what was the question? You think iyun tefillah is good? The tears work? Yeah, I read Ke'ev Lev as heartbreak, not so much tears, good tears, but like it's going to be disappointing. But either way, isn't Iyun Tefillah good? So that's an excellent question. And then you should add, by the way, also from our davening every day. What's from our davening? El Dvarim Shadam Ochel Perotem Balam Azeh Keren Kayemet Lola Lama Ba. They're not just rewards in this world, but in the world to come. Iyun Tefillah? So it's a perplexing Gemara. Says Tosfos, source 6. Kol ha'marech b'tfilato me'ayein ba. So what does it mean, me'ayein ba? So he's similar to what Rashi says. I don't have the Rashi here in front of us. Perush she'mitzapesh tavo bakshato lifi shekiven b'tfilato. He anticipates that his prayer will yield results. He knows this Gemara that's going to be effective. He or she prays intensely because they're waiting for payday. They're waiting for the results. Nevertheless, Tosfos says, Tema, the hacha, mashma did yun tefillah lav mal yuta. In this Gemara, it sounds like yun tefillah is negative. It leads to heartache. V'chein mashma ferek haroa. Gimel dvarim askirim avnotav shel adam. There are three things that bring to man, remind man of his sinfulness and undesirable, obviously. And one of them is yun tefillah, kamar yun tefillah. But wait a second, below came mashma ferek mafanin the kamar adam ochel perotem balamazeh. That what are the things that man enjoys fruits in this world and the next? V'kachashiv yun tefillah ama mal yutahu. V'chei mashma v'get pashud. And he reads another gemara. Actually, Tosfos reads other gemara in a bit of a surprising way. But either way, he's saying there's a conflicting sources. Time out. I'm saying there's conflicting sources right here on source 5. Is Ma'arich Tefillah a good thing or bad? And the Gemara doesn't want to leave it as conflicting, so the Gemara tries to harmonize. Now Tosfos is saying even in Iyun Tefillah there are conflicting sources. And for that Tosfos also wants to harmonize. So what's his harmonization towards the end of page 5, source 6? V'yesh lomar, the trei Iyun Tefillah yesh, tzvei dinim. Tosfos being a brisker here. There are two different kinds of Iyun Tefillah. Iyun tefillah dahacha, the trei iyun tefillah yesh. Iyun tefillah dahacha mitzapesh tavo bakashato. There's one type of iyun tefillah which is negative when you're awaiting results. Iyun tefillah dahatam shemechaven al libo l'tefillah. There's a iyun of concentration, of intensification, of deeper meditation on your prayer. That surely is a positive thing. So Tosfos says iyun tefillah, intense tefillah, Well, there are two different kinds of intensity. There's an intensity where you're expecting results. That's negative. And I'm just going to add to that, that that itself is a little ironic, because the source said you will get results. You'll get results, but you can't expect. It's very subtle. You'll get results, but if you expect the results, then it's negative. It's going to be thought as bad. Klape shmaya. It might lead to disappointment. And then there's a yun tefillah that's positive. And if you don't have Tosfot's harmonization, then maybe there are different deos in Chazal, whether yun tefillah is good or bad. But even with Tosfos, I'm saying let's even go with this harmonization. It shows to you that intense prayer is not a simple thing. It's very subtle. But I want to point out, it's not just that it's subtle. It's also the stakes cannot be higher. Is intense prayer a good thing or not? So on the one hand, I showed some sources it's good. On the other hand, I showed a few sources that might suggest it's bad. Then there's some sources where it might be a debate. Now we're going sort of with Tosfot trying to bring it all together, and he says, well, it depends. It depends your mindset, your motivation, how you navigate. But I'm saying that depends has the highest stakes. Because if you do it right, what's the result? First of all, your prayer is achieved. Ein tefilato chozer reikam. Second of all, Adam ochel pelotein ba'olam hazeh keren kayem et lo le'olam haba. It's the ultimate, you know, it's in that short list of the ultimate modes of religious behavior. And yet the flip side is maskirin lo avnotav, kev lev. So that very intensification leads to a very high stakes endeavor. If you do it, great reward. And if you do it in the wrong way, you know, intense loss. Yeah.
What does it look like?
Examination. Yeah, I think it's to me it's like sort of hard, like the way to define the word intense is hard. By the way, I should note just in passing, those who are interested in this topic, that the late Professor Tashma wrote an article where he thought yun tefillah in the sources means something a little bit different, more along the lines of spontaneous prayer. So that's just in passing. Somebody wants to look into it a little bit more. But I'm going a little bit more with the way Tosfot and Rashi understand it. So it's a certain intensification. It's a, you know, extending, but also I think, like he said, what's the formulation? That shemechaven et libo l'tefillah. Or the, at the end of source 7, also on page 6, the mafishi berachame, abundant supplications. Okay. I want to go a little bit further. We got to be a little intense here about intense prayer, so I can't just stop yet. So I want to talk about a few situations where prayer is inappropriate. Intense prayer, I think, is inappropriate. When is it inappropriate? Because we began with sources that it's an example, it's a model. Then we said, well, what is Chazal's attitude about it? And we saw, I think, that's a little bit more complicated. Now, are there situations where I think it's more clearly negative? So we've already encountered some. First of all, Tosfot Yun Tefillah. If you do it for expecting the results, it's a negative. That's one source that we've seen that's clearly negative. Any other sources that we've seen that seems to be negative? What else have we seen where it seems to be negative? The danger of the Modim Modim. There's something there that's negative, or making a praise. That type of of spontaneity seems negative. We quoted the Yerushalmi, it might be a little bit different, but the way the Bavli has it, that's, in other words, so it could lead to sort of formulations that are inadequate, theologically problematic. So either it could be lead to demanding of God, God, where's my results? That's wrong. Or it could be theologically inappropriate, that you're praising or expressing gratitude to God in theologically inadequate ways or inappropriate ways. What other sources have we seen about places where intense prayer is inappropriate? Yeah? Rabbi Akiva, excellent. What have we seen, Rabbi Akiva? That you don't do it in front of the tzibur. And you said it right, that it seems to be the problem, that it's one thing when you're on your own and you're supposed to do it, but with the tzibur, it's wrong because of tircha the tzibura. And I was thinking, is it just tircha the tzibura, or is it more than that? The sources do sound like it's just tircha de tzibura, but I, you know, was wondering whether it's more than that. And then I saw that Rav Lichtenstein also suggested that it's more than that. And the suggestion would be then maybe there's a big difference as an individual and Tzibur. Because the whole point, right, of the prayer of Rabbi Akiva was so intensely personal between Rabbi Akiva and God that in a sense it's isolationist. So there's another mode of powerful prayer, which is communal prayer. In other words, almost by definition, I would say intense prayers tend to be isolating prayers. Right? Think of the Hasidic masters who pray, you know, with hitpo dedut. A lot of the sources emphasize that. Don't even come to the minyan. Because in a sense, if you're going to be really intense, there is not room. It doesn't mean that you can't pray on behalf of others, but still, your prayer is very much your own personal, at your own time, the own length, the own tailoring, and that doesn't really work with the tzibur. Yeah. And right, the Rambam does codify Rabbi Akiva. Rambam says, there's the famous Gemara on Brachas Lamed Daled where they all complain, I forget to whom, but about the Sheikh Tzibur, that he davens too slow, he davens too fast, and the Amora who they complain to is Melamed Zchus. He says, right, it doesn't work. Okay, good. So far we've seen three types of limits to intense prayer. Intense prayer is inappropriate if you expect results, even though you might get results out of it, but you can't expect them. Intense prayer is inappropriate if it's praising God or expressing gratitude in ways that are theologically problematic, that don't follow the right formula. Intense prayer could either lead to tircha the tzibur or maybe even isolate you from the tzibur. And now there's some other sources. So here on Roman numeral 3, page 6. Famous Gemara that Reb Lichtenstein also likes to quote a lot here on the bottom of page 6. Roman numeral 3, page 6, source 1. Rava chazya l'Rav Hamnuna, the kamarech b'tzlute. Rava saw that Rav Hamnuna, and you know, this is not just an ordinary person, it's Rav Hamnuna, was praying at great length. And Rava had a biting comment. Amar minichin chaye olam oskim b'chaye sha'a. That he neglects the eternal life and focuses too much on immediacy. Now we usually think chaye sha'a as focusing on matters of the flesh or the body. What was he doing? What was his chaye sha'a? He was praying. But in Rava's orbit, Talmud Torah is chaye olam. And you're focusing on prayer, and especially apparently the needs of prayer and the requests of prayer, which are so focused on, you know, Baruch Aleinu, my parnasa, Rafa'inu, my health, even things like that, the Jewish people, that's in some sense too immediate. Pretty amazing Gemara. But to which there's a response, for who suffers mantfilo l'chud v'zman Torah l'chud, that there are two different modes of religious ideal, or maybe of chaya olam. There's tefillah and there's Talmud Torah, and when you're doing tefillah, do it fully, and when you're doing Talmud Torah, do it fully. But at least Rava is waving a flag, and that is that. What's the lesson from Rava? That intense prayer can sometimes encroach on other spiritual ideals, right? If you pray intensely, you take too long. When will you learn? By the way, the Gemara in Brachos asked that about the Hasidim HaRishonim. It says, they pray so much, when do they ever learn? And it answers, you know, they're the Hasidim HaRishonim, they do it all. Which in a sense is a little bit in tension with this Gemara. Because here Rava says that you should be aware that if you pray too much, that could come from other spiritual goals. So I think when Rav Lichtenstein talks about this, he always says, you know, Alavai, that's, you know, the reason why we daven briefly, because we're spending so much time learning. Okay, but at least in the Gemara, it's a serious point. But then I think the other point of Chaye Sha'a, striking as that is, as applied to davening, is the Chaye Sha'a, that davening that's all about requests can be a little bit self-involved or immediate. In a sense, there's a danger of intensified prayer that is too focused on your bakashot of the hour. Lichtenstein also quotes the Tshuva of the Rush, where the Rush picks up on this idea of Rabbi Yochanan. These sources here in Roman numeral 3, just to give proper credit, all these sources I think I've learned from Rav Lichtenstein. So here he talks about the tshuva of the Rosh. Umashe Rav Matzliach mitpalal shtei tefilot shel mincha b'chol yom imum somech al hada amar Rav Yochanan. So there's a very fascinating, this we should explore another time, there was a fascinating minhag in Gaonic times to daven mincha twice. Today we struggled to get it in once in a work day, right? But they would daven mincha twice. So the question is, what's the basis? Is it based on Rabbi Yochanan? Who's Rabbi Yochanan? The one who said, Alavai shitpalel adam kol hayom kulo. Were it only if man would spend the entire day praying. So he has a whole discussion about Rabbi Yochanan. But to us, most important is the summary here on page 7. Turn on page 7 to summary. So the summary on page 7 says, where it's a larger font, Hilkach ani omer, sheyesh la'adam lizaher, sheloit palel nadava b'lo chidush davar. One should not just start praying 4, 5, 6 times a day, unless one is really introducing new personalized requests. But he goes further. V'gam tzarich sheyem akir et atzmo zariz, zahir, imud b'dato, sheyuchal l'chaven b'tfilato, mirosh v'ad sof b'lo hasachadat. You have to know if you're, you know, there's some people know how to pray. You have to know if you know how to pray. If you have that level of concentration and intensity. As krinan lei nediv lev olaut. Then we could apply to you the pasuk that says, the generous of heart offer abundant sacrifices. So too, those who are spiritually generous, they offer abundant prayers. Aval, and this is again the high stakes, imeino mechaven yafeh, if a person cannot concentrate well, it's not just that he doesn't achieve the apex of intense prayer, but the opposite. Kari bei lama li rov zivchechem, which is tapping into some biting prophetic language where God, you know, rejects the abundant sacrifices, sees them as hollow, as empty. Likewise, multiple prayers, additional prayers, if they don't come along with concentration and with the the generous spiritual heart, but they just become formulaic and add more prayers and more prayers and more prayers, God rejects them. And then you see where the rush comes out. Were it only that we did a good job on our basic normative duties of 3 prayers a day done properly with proper kavana. And I want to bring just the last source in this section about situations, and then I'll just bring together what we just saw. Situations where intense prayer, personal prayer, spontaneous prayer is inappropriate. This is on page 7, source 3. Really, another really interesting source. The source discusses a person's license to add a voluntary prayer, which is all about Rabbi Yochanan. So we're still on Rabbi Yochanan, right? Remember Rabbi Yochanan, that a person can add multiple prayers. Not just 3 times a day, but beyond. So the Rambam quotes from the Gaonim that even though a person could pray, let's say on a weekday, 4 times, at least under certain circumstances, 5 times, if one really wants, under certain circumstances. But the Gaonim said not on Shabbos. On Shabbos, you should just pray the set prayers. Why? What's the difference between Shabbos and a weekday? So the Rambam gives his explanation. He says, because it all matches up to Korbanot, and there are very strict regulations about Korbanot on Shabbat, so too about prayer liturgy, which is Bimkom Korbanot, it has strict regulations on Shabbat. The Ravid gives a totally different explanation. Let's see the Ravid. Everybody see where it says here, V'katav HaRavid. But I'm going to actually take it about 2 lines beyond that. So I'm in page 7, source 3, towards the end of the 6th line, I think it is. The line begins with the word Shasur, and towards the end of that. Ani dat acheret yeshimi. Does everybody have it? Ani dat acheret yeshimi b'chol eile. I have a different ma'alach, different from the Rambam, says the Ravid. The Rabbi Yochanan lo amar halavai shit balel adam kol hayom. Ella shmona esre. Shehi tfilat rachamim ubakasha V'shoheh b'neihen k'dei shitcholel da'ato alav v'tkavein da'ato l'vakesh rachamim. You could intensify prayers of requests, of bakashot. Weekday Shmona Esra is dominated by the middle section, right? Weekday Shmona Esra is all about the bakashot. That's clearly the heart, just quantitatively, right? Three brachot preparing, three concluding, but the heart of it is 13 middle brachot of bakashot. That's when we're in full pitch. And we make requests. So if one has requests during a weekday and one has a lot in one's minds and one's desperate or needy, as we often are, then one could pray multiple times, 3, 4, 5, etc. But, aval tefilat Shabbat v'yom tov, she'eino ela hoda'ot. But when it comes to Shabbos and Yantif, where we don't really have a middle section of bakashot, the middle section's about kedushat hayom, but not personal requests, and we know actually there's a Yerushalmi that says one should not make personal requests on Shabbos. So on Shabbos, what is prayer? It's not a prayer of bakasha, it's a prayer of hoda'ah. It's a prayer of praise and gratitude. Lo amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan never gave us a green light to express gratitude abundantly. Just like the Gemara we saw before in Megillah, right? Rather over here, im yodeh, v'yachzor, v'yodeh, it's a bracha levatala. If you try to say to God, thank you, and thank you, and thank you, each time with a new bracha, each new bracha is a bracha levatala. So that form of intense Shabbos prayers is actually vain prayers. That's the shita of the Ravid. Well, I think, yeah.
According to the Ravid, if you want to pray more, it's not the whole Shmona Esra. It's only those that have to do with you're asking for certain requests.
Right, that's interesting. So I imagine on a weekday you would say the whole Shmona Esra, but the purpose, the matir, the license, is really all about the bakashot. And maybe to frame the bakashot properly, you begin with praise and end with gratitude. I mean, it's totally on the question. But I imagine that's still the nusach ha-tfilah, but the ikar of it is the chidush davar, probably, of the bakashot. But on Shabbos and Yom Tov, it's all about gratitude and praise, so you do it once and you do it right. And that's what I just want to underscore, that I think this is an important sort of spiritual space that he's describing, the Ravid. The Ravid's saying there are different spiritual spaces we're in Avodat Hashem. There's during the weekday, we're desperate, needy creatures who are vulnerable and mortal, and we beseech God as much as we can in order to survive. And there, the right form of avodah is to recognize that and to intensify along those lines. But on Shabbat, and I would say, now I'm adding, but I think it makes sense, on sort of a different type of spiritual space and maybe a more sacred spiritual space of Shabbat and Yom Tov. In Shabbat and Yom Tov, we transcend the desperate, vicissitudes of life. Right, Shabbat and Yom Tov is like Chaye Olam. It's like what it's like to be present in front of God in peace and harmony and stability and tranquility. And then our job is to praise and thank God in a proper expression. And we do it once and we do it right. And that's the spiritual ideal. That's at least the Shita of the Ravid. I think fascinating.
I want to delve a little bit more into the Ravid. If a person really is in stress and need, does he have to do it in a formal way? He has to say it from the Shmona Esra?
Right.
He can use his own words.
Right.
So
that's a fair...
Why the formality?
Why do you need it?
Well,
on some level...
Repetition.
Right. And on a weekday.
Yeah.
I imagine the Ravid thinks you could say Kapitel Tehillim and personal prayers too, but I think on some level, the way we approach God, there still is a mode of approaching God and requesting from God, even if there is a personal dimension to it. So let me just summarize all these sources in Roman numeral 3. These sources in Roman numeral, we're intense here. We're not ready to stop just yet. Okay. So in... actually summarizing Roman numeral 3. They're still in Roman numeral 4. Okay, so Roman numeral 4 is actually important. I feel bad. But let's get to Roman numeral 3 right for a second. intense prayer, I think overall we've seen, you know, at least the exemplars, it's a good thing, and we emulate on some level. And yet we saw in Roman numeral 2 that there are more conflicting voices in Chazal, and the narrative gets complicated somewhat. Roman numeral 3 is trying to actually delimit a little bit more, spell out situations in which intensive prayer is appropriate, or actually spelling out situations where it's inappropriate. So, yes, be intense, but be wary, lest. And what's the lest? So let's just talk about some of the lests we've seen. Lest your intensive prayers lose their intensity and just become rote repetitions, the tshuva of the rush. Be intense, but be wary, lest it weighs down on the community or isolates you from the community, Rabbi Akiva. Be intense, but be wary lest it makes you self-centered in some ways. I think self-centered that you're not sensitive to the needs of community, Rabbi Kiva, and also self-centered that you're too focused on Chaye Sha'a. Okay, be intense, but be wary lest your intensification of prayer interferes with other spiritual goals that maybe are more paramount, like the spiritual goal of Talmud Torah Chaye Olam, or maybe that's even something what the Ravid has in mind, of doing the right shevach. Be intense and spontaneous and marich in tefillah, but be wary lest you become inaccurate or theologically problematic, like the modim modim, or having too much shevach for HaKadosh Baruch Hu that actually ultimately is insulting in your confrontation with God. Be intense, but be wary lest in your intensification you start to demand or are confident in the yields of your prayer. And then ultimately, this ravid, be intense when that's the right spiritual space or place. In weekday mode of bakashot, it's appropriate in Shabbat and Yom Tov, which I would just add is likely even a higher spiritual space, maybe hard one to sustain. It's inappropriate, and there you're supposed to get things right. I think... I don't know what to do. You could either just stop, which is probably the right thing to do, because it's 9:17. I guess I got to stop. But let me just explain what was in Source 4 if you want to read. Source 4 I really like. So actually, the one source that got me into this whole topic was like at the very end. Actually, the source on page 8, and then on, if you can, look at this Ravid on your own. I don't fully get it, but it's another Ravid that's a showstopper on page 10. But let me just explain a little bit what's in the Roman numeral 4, and then you could take it home on your own and read it. And if you want, you can email me, d_flato@yahoo.com, if you want to discuss. And what's in Roman numeral 4 is what one can expect when one prays intensely. And I think that that doesn't just teach the intense prayers, because a lot of people in the room probably are like, okay, well, I should just do the rush. Let me pray 3 times a day, but what can we in general expect from our prayers? Especially when we saw that Iyun Tefillah, that you can't expect the yields. And yet the Gemara does say there are certain guarantees if you pray rightly. So what can you expect when you pray? And especially when you pray intensely. What? That you're achieving a higher spiritual state. I think that's right. You're closer to God. Or maybe there are certain guarantees of sorts, but I think the key word is of sorts. And I think some of the sources I collect in Roman numeral 4 shed light a little bit on that, of ways that God, God ultimately does, tzaddik v'yashar Hashem, and God does, what needs to be done. From our perspective, when we turn to God and we demand and implore, beseech, expect, hope, what do the sources teach about the returns? And the sources teach there are returns, but it's a little bit more subtle. There are returns, but not always exactly the way we expect them, or not totally complete, or even when we think, that's what arrived at the very end, I'll just allude to it. Even when we think we got our prayer fulfilled, we're still vulnerable. It's a key ravid. That even when we think God answered our prayer, no mortal creature, that you are vulnerable. A bit of an intense ravid. And even when your prayer is answered, keep praying. That's what the Ravid's about. Keep praying even when your prayer is answered, because you're still needy. And I'd say that's sort of a good way to summarize everything. So what we've seen, source 1, 2, 3, And now, just allude to four, is there's intense prayer, and I think it's a certain model, exemplar, and ideal, and I think we're lucky some of us encounter people who pray that way, or in our own ways find moments where we could pray a little bit more intensely. Chazal, I think, have a richer discourse about it, noting both the positives, of course, but also certain negatives. And then in source three, we talked about all sorts of situations where at least it can encounter problems. It doesn't mean that within the right space it is an optimal and ideal. And I think it very much is by the Rambam and Shulchan Aruch codifying Chassidim and Rishonim. And then alluding to the end, that the end is that one ultimately must always approach God with a serious sense of one's, the Maharal elaborates on this a lot, a serious sense of one's dependence on God and neediness on God. Just sort of to conclude that a lot of people talk about the famous Unkelus, that Vayi Adam LaNefesh Chaya, Unkelus says that man became Ruach Mamamala. The man became a creature of speech. And clearly also in early on in Bereshit, it's not just a speech of a creature of speech, but famous Rashi about the rain, that man, it's sort of built into creation, that man's needy. A man needs to use his capacity of speech to beseech God, and through that beseeching of God, man connects to God. And that ultimately is, I think, the most profound posture that we have as human beings in our relationship to the Almighty.